W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
An Ohio jury has ordered a woman to pay damages to a football player that she had accused of rape.
Cleveland.com reports a civil jury has found a woman liable for malicious prosecution in a rape allegation she made against former Ohio State football standout Garyon Conley more than 5 years ago. The accusation against Conley came shortly before the 2017 NFL draft, in which he had been projected to be a high first-round pick. The 23-year-old woman alleged that he had sexually assaulted her in a Cleveland hotel room. Conley's attorney said the sex was consensual. He asked for just $300 in damages. The jury agreed. I'm Norman Hall.
Former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is set to return to office. Some wonder if he'll use the opportunity to push legislation to erase some of his legal troubles. Netanyahu is on trial for corruption. I'm Jackie Quinn, AP News.
Everybody.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Home heating bills in Wisconsin are going up this winter. Experts say there are steps you can take to reduce the impact. Mike Moen has more.
The Energy Information Administration predicts that Midwest households that rely on natural gas will spend an average of $1,000 on heating bills this winter. That's a 33% increase over last year. Whitney Hayes of the energy nonprofit Elevate agrees the region will see cost headaches in the coming months.
We're expecting gas prices to continue to go up this winter because of things like the war in Ukraine, and we're still doing a lot of recovery from COVID and shipping and supply shock and whatnot. So
she advises that small things such as making sure there's air sealing around windows and doors can produce savings on your bill. And energy experts say electric heat pumps have come down in price and are now more reliable in extremely cold weather. David Kalata of the Citizens Utility Board agrees that heat pumps are a strong alternative to natural gas, but he stresses they still might be out of reach for low-income households and that policymakers need to offer more incentives to make them accessible to everyone. Meanwhile, he says maximizing these options will make a difference.
And if you take advantage of this program and then you seal cracks in windows and maybe install energy efficient light bulbs, all of that works together holistically.
For those worried about their heat being disconnected this winter, most Midwestern states have cold weather rules, which require utilities to offer a payment arrangement to avoid that scenario.
Budget billing programs don't save you money over the course of a year, but they smooth out your payments, so you pay less in the winter and more in the summer.
Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
The committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol is holding what may be its final hearing Monday, December 19th, starting at noon. Listen for special live coverage on your local Civic Media radio station. Then join the conversation as your favorite hosts talk about the hearing, the final report, and what it all means to you. It's insight you won't find anywhere else. Tune in on Monday, December 19th at noon to your local Civic Media radio station, also streaming on the Civic Media app.
Work, the kids' practices, household errands. Seems like every hour's rush hour at our house. But no matter how busy things get, we still make balanced nutrition a priority with help from Country Hearth Natural Breads. Whole grains and other natural ingredients are carefully blended and baked into delicious, nutritious breads like Dakota Style 12 Grain, Multigrain, and 100% whole wheat. There's a Country Hearth favorite for everyone in the family. Country Hearth Breads, baking our best for you.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
The Devil's Advocates.
The plaintiff, Donald J. Trump, hereby serves his suit against the defendants, Hillary Clinton and her cohorts, orchestrated an unthinkable plot, one that shocks the conscience and is an affront to the nation's democracy. This week on Fox.
You know what I mean? Like you're throwing a few too many adverbs and adjectives in this sentence.
One man, one mission Donald Trump gets made fun of. This is Watergate 2.
Making radio great again.
Catch Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow at its brand new time, 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays. the city of Shanghai started administering an inhalable COVID-19 vaccine. I hear a lot of you saying the same thing I had in my head. I don't know about that.
As long as they're not just crop dusting everyone.
Crop dusting, that's exactly what I think people would be fearful of. I would not trust the Chinese government. I would trust people who really know about inhaling something and the good that it does you. Of course, I'm talking about Dom and Crute.
What grows in the forest? Trees? Sure. Know what else grows in the forest? Our imagination, our sense of wonder, and our family bonds grow too. Because when we disconnect from this and connect with this, we reconnect with each other. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you and start exploring at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
What's up, Wisconsin? You're listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel Playfish and Danielle Fairman, live from the Fishbowl in downtown Waukesha, 217 Wisconsin Avenue. Holy cow. I'm not joking about this. If you are a bird hunter of any kind in the state of Wisconsin, if you chase ducks, if you chase geese, turkeys, partridge, sandhill, not yet. Can't chase sandhill cranes yet.
Redacted.
But I'm very excited about when we're going to have the possibility to hunt sandhill cranes. Now, the Wisconsin duck season just ended very recently, and it was incredibly successful, I feel. I had a great season. Had some unbelievable field hunting with mallards. Even got some golden eyes out on Okauchee Lake, which is crazy. Danielle Fairman's on a break this week, and we have guest hosting the show, Mr. Paul House. You've met him on some previous shows. Paul, great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome, Wisconsin.
Yeah, this is awesome. And I got to, you know what, usually I kind of ramble a little bit, but I'm so excited, and I got so many questions in my head. Taylor Finger, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources game bird ecologist. Now, he used to be the waterfowl ecologist, but now he's in charge of game birds. So everything from ruffed grouse to turkeys to geese to ducks, that is a lot under your jurisdiction, and that's a lot of pressure. Taylor, it's awesome to have you. You are a fountain of knowledge, and you know what I love about Taylor Finger, to be real? The guy's an actual real hunter. So he puts his money where his mouth is. He's not just some guy sitting in an ivory tower, you know, telling wardens how to write tickets. He's up there studying the biology. He's kind of a nerd about the biology of the birds. And we are one of the most exciting flyways in the entire United States, the Mississippi Flyway. We've got a fantastic turkey population. Ruffed grouse are known, you know, up where the St. Croix rods are made up north. Taylor, man, awesome to have you here.
Thanks, Joel. Thanks, everyone. I really appreciate you having me here tonight.
Yes, welcome.
I don't even know what the heck we should start with. I think we just wrapped up the duck season, the Wisconsin duck season, and I hear from so many people. In fact, Paul was talking about it today. Why is it so short? It seems like it ends, and then all the ducks start pouring in.
Yeah.
I mean, talk to us. Give kind of a background on why we have the structure we have and how the federal flyway information, you know, affects us here. And explain to folks who want it. Some people want it earlier. Some people want it later. We have a split in it, so it goes a little longer now. But what is the main reason we have the structure we have, and why does the duck season seem so short?
Sure. So for the Mississippi Flyway, we're allowed a 60-day season, and the number one question we get is how come it's not longer? You know, say if you go out to California, it's a 107-day season, or it's over 70 days when you're in the Dakotas. The question is, how come we're only 60 days? And the reason why we have that is because the Mississippi Flyway, of all four flyways and all waterfowl hunters in the country, we have half of them within our flyway.
Holy cow.
So, yeah, it's one of those ones where with that.
The Facebook works. Paul just pulled it up, and it was that was not a technical difficulty. That was the Facebook Live. So if you want to check us out on Facebook, WAUK 540 AM on Facebook, you can actually see our ugly mugs while you watch it, too. So you were saying, so our flyways jam-packed with waterfowl hunters. That's the bottom line?
Yep, and so that's why we have a 60-day season, and then the Fish and Wildlife Service set frameworks, like frame boards that we can go either, we can't go any earlier than the Saturday near September 24th or any later than January 31st. So we have Wisconsin ranks in the top five annually for total number of waterfowl hunters, which is pretty unique when you think about it.
Are you listening to this, Paul? You asked me about this today. This is the craziest part. Yes. We kill mad waterfowl here, don't we?
And we have a lot of hunters, and you know, we're at the top of the flyway, so it's not like we're with a lot of hunters kind of fighting over at the top of the flyway. We're not Louisiana, we're not Arkansas, we're not Mississippi. So with that many waterfowl hunters, you have people that want to hunt early, you have people that want to hunt, you know, during the month of October, because then all of a sudden bow season kicks in, and then they want to be, you know, bow hunting during the rut. But then there's those diehard guys that want to be out in the month of December. So you have to try to navigate a season structure that meets the demands of the early hunters, the people that regulate right in the middle of the season, and then those guys that want to be hunting those beautiful birds sitting at the end of the year.
So. Yeah, because they get really fully plumed later on.
Yes, they're beautiful. I just saw a whole bunch behind my house today. It was just the most gorgeous thing you've ever seen. I'm
locking up. Yeah, you were driving me crazy, Joel. They're dumping in. They're bent over. Let's go. Come on. You could fold them like suitcases. Paul, the season's over.
Oh, that figures.
I know. I got to tell you, I think some of it depends, opinion-wise, and this is completely anecdotal. I have no science to back this up, which I know science guys like you love when those of us, when Yahoos like us are like, you know what you guys ought to do is. But I think a lot of hardcore hunters would love to see a bigger break so that we could go further into January, shoot some of those plumed out birds, and catch those later migratory birds.
And so we have that discussion each year, and based on surveys that we have done on like the Mississippi River, on Green Bay, and then we have feedback from our staff, we know that the primary migration occurs in the state of Wisconsin that first week of November, first and second week of November. And the thing to remember is we have a lot of birds that fly through Wisconsin. It's not just mallards. And that's what people like to shoot at the end of the year is those big green-headed mallards. But you have gadwall, pintail, canvasbacks, redheads, you know, wood ducks are coming through.
Golden eyes.
All those types of birds. Heads, so you got to think you're structuring a season for that. And if you take off a ton of time, say in the month of October or towards the end of November, when all those birds are coming through, the amount of people that are out there hunting in December and January are really, really avid folks, but it's not a lot of them. So the idea is that you have to structure a season for the most amount of people.
Yeah. You know what you'd hear if you put a big break in October, you know what you'd, and then you'd hear from 8 million people saying, oh, it's baloney, man. They were all here and I couldn't shoot them. You put a big break in there. I don't want to go freeze my rear end off in the end of January.
Right. Yep.
The same people have issues with the teal season when the mosquitoes are out and it's 85 to 90 degrees. It's one of those ones that October seems to be that sweet zone for the majority of hunters where you have avid folks on either side.
I think we get spoiled in this state. I'm not even joking about that. The natural resources we have, and once hunting season starts, you know, and for me it's September 1st when the goose season opens up, and now we're going to like January 8th for turkey, and then the end of January in a lot of counties for deer, you can still get your buck until the end of January. Yep. I think we're just absolutely spoiled in this state. And when you spoil somebody, when somebody gets to eat what they want for dinner every single night, they're going to find a way to complain about what they're eating.
Right.
Always.
Yep. And that's the difficult part that we have to deal with is you know, you never hear from happy people. You only ever hear from angry people. So
that is a fact. 14 years in the legislature definitely taught me that the people who are happy are not the ones calling and complaining.
Yep.
How tough is it for you to balance the social aspect of hunting versus the science? That's got to get in the way sometimes. The social aspect is when people want to do it, how they want to do it, how hunting's perceived by hunters and non-hunters alike. And that's got to be a tricky part of your job because you are literally the top of the food chain, no pun intended, for deciding when and how things are done in Wisconsin, how they're recorded, and that's got to be a tricky balance.
Yeah, it's. I've been fortunate to work with some really awesome folks in terms of the research and science field where they... I bring them the questions because I hear from the hunters. I hear from all these different types of folks that says, hey, how come we can't do this? Or what can we do? I'd like to shoot more Canada geese. Or how come Wisconsin's the last state in the country still at one hen mallard? Or what about the turkey population? I'm not seeing as many turkeys now in my county as I used to see. And we rely on the research from those guys to help make those informed decisions. And, I mean, again, recognizing that there's, you know, thousands of people out there hunting, and it's really great to get that input and feedback from them. But again, we don't want to make emotional decisions on a lot of this stuff either. So making sure that we have that data to help inform folks. And fortunately, Wisconsin's been one of those that they're really in tune. Hunters are super in tune with what they want to do, and they bring stuff in. And quite often we've seen it where, like, hey, this is what we're seeing. We go and we look at the two-hen mallard thing. That was one of those ones, like, how come we can't do this? And for a long, long time, we had science and research that said, hey, we want to remain at one-hen mallard. Then when we started actually looking into the new research, the new science, and said, look at this, we actually can be shooting two-hen mallard. So that was driven by hunters telling us that, hey, maybe your science is not as good as it could be. And then we took that and we took and looked at new research and new science and said, absolutely, what you're seeing on the landscape is definitely what we can be doing.
You know, one
very cool.
One of the things I see people complain about constantly is, oh, they never listen to us. They never do anything. But I have to tell you, in the years that I've been hunting, even just this last decade alone, we've seen monumental changes in the waterfowl structures. We've seen an additional season for Canada geese of 5 a day per person. I mean, yes. If someone, no, you don't let us kill enough Canada geese. Now you can kill 5 a day per person in the early season. Now you can kill 5 a day per person during the holiday hunt season. And 3 a day versus 2. When I started hunting, it was 2. And you don't have to call them in. You don't have to punch a tag. I mean, those are monumental, massive changes. 2 hens in a bag limit of mallards of 4 is a monumental change. A teal season. So I think people, a lot of times, they give a rash knee-jerk reaction to something, but if they're actually taking a look at the last 10 years in the waterfowl season in Wisconsin's gone through monumental changes, and I don't see one of those changes that is not benefiting the hunter.
Yeah, we've definitely tried to liberalize where we could based on the science and research that we have, and then try to simplify a lot of our rules, a lot of our regulations. Like this last year, you know, for open water hunting in inland lakes, we always said you had to be 1,000 feet from shore. Now we made it 500 feet from shore, which opened up tens of thousands of acres for hunting with the idea that, hey, you know, maybe people might get a little bit mad, their guns going off a little bit closer to their house on Lake Winnebago, but we didn't get a single negative phone call. A warden didn't tell us anything about that. So again, being willing to liberalize and simplify these types of things to add additional opportunity for hunters is one of the things that we are really striving for.
Are we going to see open water hunting on inland lakes at some point?
So we're actually working with our new research scientist. And if you recall the person, the previous waterfowl biologist had created an ad hoc committee back in 2010.
Ken Van Horn?
Yeah,
great guy.
Created an ad hoc committee in 2010 to add the lakes that we currently have. We've identified this in our waterfowl management plan for the state of Wisconsin to create another ad hoc committee to see what lakes we can add or potentially looking at the whole concealment regulation in general statewide. So yeah, we're gonna be looking at that.
That is really exciting, and I keep peppering you with questions because I got a million. But we're gonna talk about everything from what waterfowl actually sees, what colors they see, what they see when they're coming down and staring at us in the blinds, and we're gonna talk about the ribeye of the sky because that's a social debate that I find fascinating and have been personally lambasted for. You're listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle, filling in for Danielle. Paul House, we'll be right back.
Join Max Inc. Radio this New Year's Eve as we present live at thespaceship.tv. Max Inc. Radio will broadcast live from the spaceship.tv studios 6 p.m. to midnight, plus live performances from the Civil Engineers. And the Zeros.
Too hot. Oh, let me tell you, I'm too hot. Yeah, your soul's on fire.
groove machine.
Who's there, the Spice Girls? Muy caliente.
Live streaming video at thespaceship.tv and live on this Civic Media station. Let's party New Year's Eve starting at 6 p.m. live from thespaceship.tv. Happy New Year's from Civic Media and Max Inc. Radio. We are local music.
Veterans, whatever you're going through, don't wait. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. A few flurries possible at times this afternoon, otherwise cloudy. Highs around 20, winds out of the west 10 to 15 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 8 above tonight. Partly cloudy skies. Cloudy skies tomorrow. A few flurries possible at times. High temperatures reach up to 25. A dusting of snow tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 16 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM. Your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to WAUK 540 AM 101 FM, The Shaw. This is yours truly, Joel Clayfish. You're listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman. Filling in for Danielle is Paul House tonight. Paul, it's awesome to have you here.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I'm looking at the monitor right now, and it looks like I might have to take the dye to the beard again soon. It's looking a little gray. What do you think? Is it looking a little
gray?
Gives
you some character, man. A little more camouflage.
Every reminder we're getting older by the minute.
Yes.
Oh, Paul, this is pretty awesome, isn't it, having Taylor here?
Very cool. Very educational.
Yeah. Department of Natural Resources game bird ecologist in charge of all game birds from waterfowl to upland to turkeys. Taylor has got his finger on the pulse. Every time I talk to him, I'm blown away at his range of knowledge, his breadth of knowledge.
Very,
is crazy.
Very fluent in it.
I want to go to a controversial topic to the general public. Maybe not to you. You know, Kent Van Horn, your predecessor, fantastic guy, made sure the federal government had a flyway set up here. Now we're just waiting on the legislature to give us the tantalizing tidbits of ribeye in the sky. We're talking about the sandhill crane. Sewing machines, as a lot of the farmers call them.
Yes.
Because the sandhill crane will follow along the planter and pick out the seed, and you never even get a corn stalk.
Yes, now, they will.
I tell people, farmers love every animal that except the ones they own, because a lot of those wild game animals are eating their crops.
Oh, yeah.
Not only does a sandhill crane eat the crops, they pick out the seed before it can become a crop. What the ever-loving hell is going on that we don't have a sandhill crane hunting season here in the state of Wisconsin? Are we poised to have one? And everybody says, when are we going to get it?
So we do have a flyway management plan for the eastern population of sandhill cranes. Like you said, Kent Van Horn was one of the ones that helped develop that plan back in 2011. We're actually looking for an update for that plan, hopefully here this winter from the Mississippi Flyway. But yeah, again, that plan identifies, you know, population goals. Right now, we're well above the population goals identified.
Tell me numbers, because if people are curious, what are we talking about with population goals? How many do we have here, and do we have a sustainable hunting number?
So in the plan, we identify between 40 and 60,000 sandhill cranes is the ideal population goal that we identify. And right now, based on the fall survey counts, we're sitting at about 100,000 birds. That's realistically probably an underestimation in terms of the actual number that we have, because it's likely that's the capacity of the fall survey, not really a metric. Jeez. Of what's that's how many people can count how many cranes, and basically we're finding that about 100,000 is what they can count. So again, I you know, we have a really good breeding populations in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, Ontario, and they do migrate all the way down into getting into Alabama and Florida. And, but it's one of those ones that this is really a social issue. Yeah, the biologically, yes, we're well above the limit that we should be at for, you know, what we've identified within the management plan. But this is something that, you know, 30 years ago, you didn't see sandhill cranes.
Exactly.
And so now it's one of those ones to convince people that this has been a success story, to the point where now they're, as with every success story in wildlife, they get to be a high enough population that they're causing nuisance, they're causing damage, whether we're talking turkeys, whether we're talking anything else that, you know, we've brought back. And so now it's the hard discussions of people love these or people hate these. And, you know, and
or people love them but want to eat them.
And that's right now as our conservation organizations and stuff have really been lobbying hard, working really hard with folks to try to establish a sandhill crane season in Wisconsin. And in Wisconsin, because it's not a game species already and it requires a permit quoted system, it does require legislation to establish a season.
How would that look?
So based on the states, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Alabama within our flyway, we identify a framework within the management plan. How it sets it is you're allowed 10%, maximum 10% of your fall count. So again, Wisconsin sits at 40 or 50,000 birds we count each year. So at a maximum, you could ask for 10% of that. In all reality, I doubt we would even come close to something like sure. that. But yeah, again, like so Kentucky or Alabama, I think they're sitting at about 2,000 permits or 2,000 tags, and then they would issue 1,000 people 2 tags. So, gotcha. And the way that structure is you have to take a educational class prior to a test for identification. The money that is collected for the tags and permits goes to education, research, and habitat. So, again, there's things that clearly...
Again, an example of hunters being the conservationists.
Absolutely.
And supporting a healthy, sustainable resource. You know, Paul, you're a farmer.
Yeah.
And you, anecdotally, I mean, you said 100 grand, 100,000 of these birds. I think anecdotally, anybody who lives in the country or even the cities now is seeing so many of these. I see a ton on our farm. You
crazy,
see a ton.
Crazy, crazy amounts of them, yes. And they're always having, you know, deuces. Sometimes they've seen 3, you know, offspring of them. So yep. They're definitely reproducing without an issue.
And they're kind of bullies, I'll be honest. I've seen them bully other waterfowl and bully turkeys out of a field before. I know that in states where they can hunt them, they don't allow dogs to chase them unless the dogs have got, you know, Kevlar guards on their eyes. I mean, they're tough birds, and God love them. We definitely need a sustainable... They're beautiful birds.
Very beautiful.
And they're prehistoric looking. And they certainly are something that needs to have some protections around them to have a sustainable source. But I do think it's time for a hunting season for them.
And that's, again, it's, you know, the department's role in this is to provide information and education. And like I said, biologically, this is... you could definitely have a sustainable... you know, limited hunt on these types of things. It would make sure that nobody wants to have a season on a species that's going to drive the population down. That's really, you want to make sure that
correct.
This is
yes.
around for a long
especially
time.
Especially not hunters.
So, yeah. So like I said, it's one of those ones that it is a social issue and people are extremely passionate on both sides of it.
No doubt. All right. And just like that, half the show's over. And that's why to have Taylor here is crazy and awesome, because we get to ask him all the tough questions that all these bird hunters in the state of Wisconsin wonder all the time. When we come back, we're going to start yes. off with what the heck waterfowl sees, but then Paul's got some questions about some upland hunting, which is also a big pastime here in the state of Wisconsin. We'll be right back. You're listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel and Danielle on 540 AM WAUK 101 FM, The Shaw.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUKradio.com.
The committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol is holding what may be its final hearing Monday, December 19th, starting at noon. Listen for special live coverage on your local civic media radio station. Then join the conversation as your favorite hosts talk about the hearing, the final report, and what it all means to you. It's insight you won't find anywhere else. Tune in on Monday, December 19th at noon to your local civic media radio station, also streaming on the Civic Media app.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
AP News, I'm Ben Thomas. More details on Tuesday night's mass shooting that killed six in Chesapeake, Virginia. Our Mike Hempen has them.
Investigators say the Walmart supervisor who shot and killed six co-workers left behind what he called a death note. Andre Bing blamed others for mocking him and said he wishes his parents would have paid closer attention to his social deficits. Bing also said he did not plan the shooting, but that, quote, things just fell in place like I was led by the Satan, unquote. Co-workers who survived the shooting say he was known for being difficult and for being hostile with employees. Police say Bing legally purchased the 9mm gun he used the day of the killings. He had no criminal record. Bing died at the scene of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. I'm Mike Hempen.
Residents of Colorado Springs are reassessing things after last weekend's mass shooting at a gay nightclub. State Representative Leslie Harrod says she'd hoped the city would have aged out of hate.
Of transphobia, of racism, of homophobia. We're not going to just age out of it.
In fact, she says some are breeding it. Her answer?
We have to actively teach a new narrative. We have to actively embrace people who are different than us or those who are just like us and see us for who we are completely. Colorado Springs should lead that now.
In his nightly address, Ukraine's President Vladimir Zelensky says the number of people without power across the country has been halved, but that leaves 6 million still experiencing blackouts, the result of Russian strikes. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says the alliance's commitment to Ukraine is unwavering.
Allies are providing unprecedented military support, and I expect foreign ministers will also agree to step up non-lethal support.
COVID-19 numbers are trending upward in the U.S. The CDC's tracker shows cases and deaths on the rise. This is AP News.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
Governor Tony Evers, Tim Michaels said you had gone, quote, full woke. Dr. Jill Underley said that somebody who says that has no idea what we're doing in schools to make sure kids feel safe.
We want to make sure all kids feel supported. Tim Michaels, we don't teach CRT in our schools. You got to come to the present century here, Tim, and be cognizant of what actually goes in the schools. My guess is you've never been in a public school in Wisconsin.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit stoptextsstoprex.org. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Blame it all on my roots. I showed up in
Blame it on my roots. Born in Wisconsin. Can't help it. Can't help but love the outdoors. You're listening to Raising Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman. And filling in for Danielle Fairman is Paul House. But we have a special treat. Danielle Fairman is on hold. Danielle, what's happening? How are you doing this evening?
Hello. I'm all right. How are you guys? You sound amazing and look amazing.
Oh, well, I'll
thank
take
you
for
keeping your chair warm.
And also going to tell you, you're a great liar. I hope it gets you far in life.
You don't need to dye anything. You look good.
She's actually listening, but she's not even here. What's going on, Danielle?
Dun, dun, dun. So I'm very jealous because I have many questions too, but you're already covering everything. But the ribeye of the sky, one question I wanted to ask was, what can the public do to help that, to make it go faster? Can we do anything to help with these numbers, with anything to make that ribeye of the sky my freezer food?
That's an awesome question.
Very good.
So yeah, right now, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I spelled your name wrong. My fault.
No, no worries. So right now, for folks that are interested in having a sand dune crane season, as I said, it requires legislation, is reaching out to your local legislator, your local representative, and advocating on behalf of that. This last year, there was a bill that was put forward. It didn't quite have the legs to get across the line, but there are still a lot of legislators and conservation organizations interested going into this next cycle that are it sounds like they're interested in trying to bring it back forward.
Yeah, you know what? That was such an awesome question, Danielle. I'm actually going to go a little further into that and tell you, if you're out there and you're interested in having a sandhill crane hunting season, contact your state representative, contact your senator, because what you have is a coalition of unlikely partners together right now. The Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, Safari Club International, Wisconsin Game Preserve Association. You have the Farm Bureau on board with this. There is a conglomerate of incredibly good and powerful organizations that want to see a sandhill crane hunting season for the benefit of Wisconsin's economy, for the benefit of the farms, for the benefit of the farmers, and for the benefit of food in the freezer. So I'm super glad you asked that question, and I'm glad you called in, and we miss you around here.
Yeah.
I'll miss you. I'll be there next week, but you'll be gone next week.
That's right.
We'll get it.
All right. All right, Danielle.
All right, have a good night, guys.
You too. We had a call. We did have another caller who jumped on. If he comes back, we'll get to it. But I'm going to get to something when it comes to all types of hunting, Taylor, and that's concealment. What do birds see? What colors do they see? Does it vary from species as to what colors they see? Do they see in three dimension? What do they see when they're flying down on sets, on decoy sets? What does a turkey see when it's coming out of the roost? What do they see when they're on ground level with you? What is the best concealment? And what do we think as hunters that they're just not thinking as birds? And what do they think that we never think of?
Yeah, the hide is the most important thing as a hunter, making sure that you have, I mean, you can be on the X, but if you stick out like a sore thumb, you're still not going to have a good day. So with waterfowl, certain species of, so birds in general, some birds just see in UV, some see in the same light that we do, but for waterfowl in general, that they do see in a different light spectrum than us, as well as whether you're seeing 3D versus 2D. You know, for example, I know people that'll just put out black decoys because they're looking at silhouettes. They're not necessarily looking at the color or looking at those types of things, but there's it all depends on the situation. So I've had birds that'll flare because you have one pintail out there with all one pintail decoy, and it's a white thing that does it's showing up and it's flashing, and they don't like it at all.
Interesting.
So for waterfowl, like people don't think about it, but you every time you look up, they're seeing a white face. Unless you are hidden perfectly, they are looking for those keys, because the thing is these birds are being hunted a lot. So they're being hunted in Canada, they're being hunted in our flyway all the way down. Think about Mojo decoys.
Right.
You know, 15, 20 years ago, they were the elite thing to bring ducks in.
Sure.
Now I will not throw one out because those ducks know that if I go near that flashing thing, I'm likely going to get shot at.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So these birds generationally learn those types of things. So, again, as a hunter, you have to think of where am I, what's a good hide, whether, again, same thing with turkey hunting is, I mean, there's nothing in the woods that sees better than a turkey. And it's one of those things.
If turkeys could smell, you'd never kill one.
I mean, never.
When you think about it, the success rate for a turkey hunter in the state of Wisconsin is about 17 to 18%.
Really?
So,
wow.
So it's extremely low.
I'm really good.
Yeah.
You are good.
It's extremely low.
I killed two with one shot one time.
But when we talk to turkey hunters, on average, 75 to 80% of them are happy and satisfied with their season. So there's nothing else out there that you can be that low success rate at killing something and still be happy with how the thing shook out.
I don't think there's anybody out there with that low success rate who's happy about it. I don't even think meteorologists are happy with 17%.
Why? They still get paid. They don't care.
That's true. They're about 17%, I'm pretty sure. If they're lucky.
But it just goes to speak of how difficult it is. That's the thing is, I mean, if you kill a turkey, it's a success. It's a trophy. You should be really proud of it because the way we have our season set up, you have a limited amount of time. You have one tag.
I'm going turkey hunting tomorrow. Now I'm nervous about it.
I'm spoiled, I guess. Excited. That's why I quit hunting them. It got too easy.
See?
Yeah.
Paul.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Go to Paul's farm, get an SCI, you know, gold medal turkey.
Yeah.
That was awesome. So I got a quick question. So we got snow on the ground now. White sheets over the top of you. Do they have some UV thing that's going to flare the birds? Do they not? Do they look like a snow cover? Do they not look like a snow cover?
You got to break it up. If you just throw a white sheet over you, it's going to still stick out. Which, again, it's interesting. So if anybody's been goose hunting and they use those A-frames,
yeah,
they look like they stick out like a sore thumb to us. But right now, Canada geese, you're sitting 4 feet up. You look right. Like you're in the middle of a field.
But
like
they're not seeing the dimension of that.
They're not seeing that. And so, again, as of right now, whether it's the mojo of the Canada geese and, you know, 20 years down the road, they're going to figure that thing out. But right now they work awesome. And it's, again, it's all in the perspective that you're going to be having. And as I said, break it up. Don't, if you have just a single white sheet, make sure you're throwing some corn stalks or you're throwing something on there.
Are you better off, you think, with a white sheet over the top of you or a snow cover or just in the corn stubble? Or are they going to notice, wait a minute, there's a giant patch of corn stubble and the rest is white? Or am I overthinking it?
I'd dig in with the material that are there. I think I've had more success that way than trying to bring in my own stuff and then trying to hide while you're in there. Bring a rake, bring a shovel. That type of stuff, and then hide and hunker into it. So
settle a debate. Can you use pit blinds in the state of Wisconsin or not?
No, you can't.
You cannot?
Well, so you can use a pit blind, yes, in a field. You can't use like what they used to water have in pits. Water pits.
Okay.
Yeah. So
okay.
Yeah, you can still use a pit blind in Wisconsin for Canada goose or for field hunting.
But the problem is the farmer's going to have real trouble with his tractor when he hits that pit blind when he's trying to till in the spring.
Right. There's some next door to my property on where you were turkey hunting. There's some old pit blinds out there. I've never seen a human being in them.
They were a big deal at Horicon.
They are incredibly effective, if you can get in the pit. We should talk about that. I've seen some of these pit blinds where these guys are living underneath, shooting pool and making, you know, stakes the ground, and they just pop up to kill the birds when they come. That looks pretty awesome to me, I'll tell you that.
Yep.
All right, yeah, because we've got, we open back up here in the state of Wisconsin on Sunday for the late goose season, which is 5 per person per day, and that goes till January 4th.
Third. Yep.
January 3rd, and it's 5 a day per person per day all the way through the 3rd?
Yep, in the south zone.
In the south zone.
Yep, the Mississippi River zone still keeps their 3 birds a day. I mean, based on the public feedback and input that we got, the Mississippi River hunters were happy with the 3 birds a day, but the south zone hunters, we were at 5 birds a day during the early season because we know that 90% of the birds we shoot during the early season are our own local birds, which has a growing population.
Right. Yes.
Then we go down to 3 during the regular season because still 40% of the birds that come through Wisconsin are those ones that are migrating from Canada. And that population's been stable to declining over the last 20 to 30 years. But again, based on research, based on band recoveries, based on that type of information, we were able to increase the bag limit during the late season because we knew that 80% of the Canada geese shot in the months of December and January were our own local birds again. So again, it's an opportunity. There are birds out there. We have them available. That population's doing great. Why not give people the chance to take advantage of it?
Oh, that is awesome. And that is
awesome.
Paul, you know, a lot of people get really down on the DNR, and I'm not saying there aren't reasons to get down on the DNR from time to time. Any government agency's got to, you know, be paid attention to.
Of course.
But when I hear Taylor come in and talk about changing regulations to give hunters the benefit to and still stay within the conservation limits of keeping a healthy population, that makes me happy and says some things are going right.
I agree, absolutely, and that's what they should be there for. No ifs, ands, or buts about it, and it's really refreshing to hear that because some of the other things that, you know, are happening out there aren't so conducive, but, you know, everything is about data.
I think it matters, too, to have somebody at the top like Taylor who's an actual hunter.
100%.
He's not sitting behind a desk studying the biology and not seeing how it plays out in the field. The guy's in the field. The guy's on the water.
Oh, yeah.
And he's hunting the birds that he's learning about, and he's seeing them anecdotally and by the numbers, which I think is incredibly important. You know, I don't care what they're paying you. It's probably not enough because you couldn't trade me for the world to be in your position, Taylor, because the criticism that you potentially face over the decisions you make, I mean, that's got to be stressful and tough. Is that a tough spot to be in?
Yeah, like we said before, you only ever hear from the angry folks. The status quo people are, you know, people that are happy with how things shake out. You know, you don't necessarily hear from them, but, you know, you'll get up a handful of emails that are like, hey, I had a blast, or we just did a disabled turkey hunt, and a guy sent me a picture and said, I really appreciate you guys going out of your way to make sure that I could do this. Those are the things that keep you going. But, no, good yeah, recognizing you. That, you know, we have, you know, hundreds of thousands of hunters, whether they're pursuing turkeys or migratory birds, and you're never going to make all of them happy. And just, again, as a hunter, as you said myself, there's things that we have for season structures that I'm like, oh, man, it would sure be nice to have something else. But in the grand scheme of things, knowing that we're coming out the other side and we're providing opportunities for people in a way that this is going to be something that they can enjoy, their kids can enjoy, their grandkids can enjoy. So using the best science available to make those decisions.
That's you buy awesome. Into, yeah, that is awesome. You Very. Buy into algorithms, moon phases, weather patterns.
No, yeah, for, I mean,
gravity.
But yeah, gravity. I think I got that. Yeah, no. Gravity.
No. But do you believe in it affecting waterfowl and game birds?
Oh, absolutely. Again, for waterfowl migration, it depends on species. So, for example, things like pintail. Time of daylight is the thing that'll drive a migration. It won't be necessarily the cold conditions, or ringnecks are the same way. Ringnecks are the same time every single year based on time of daylight.
How long it's daylight.
Yep. Versus the cold is going to be the thing that's going to drive them. Or you have things like woodcock migration that are going to be coming through. It's going to be usually that last full moon in October. Well, you know, if you got a north wind anytime during that full moon phase, those birds are going to be moving and heading on out. So, yeah, there are definitely, whether you have high pressure patterns or things along those lines, for sure, those are what move the bird around.
Interesting.
It does matter. I'm telling you, because turkeys get on patterns in the fall. And if you can find, I mean, they're like, literally, they can be like the Spanish Armada in the fall. I mean, just 40, 60, 100 of them all grouped together, hens and jakes, and then the bachelor groups. Yep. And the one rule I've learned about turkeys in the fall is there is no rule about turkeys in the fall.
Yes, no rules.
Sometimes the toms will court the hens practicing. Sometimes they won't go anywhere near them. Sometimes a hen call will send the toms running. Sometimes the jakes will fight with the toms and they're in a hen group.
Scouting is the number one thing.
Oh,
whether you're going after, it doesn't matter what you're going after. If you're Agreed. Willing to put a little bit of time and effort ahead of time, you're going to come out the other side looking much better.
I yep. drove around 150 miles yesterday in the morning looking for turkeys to find, and found them in four fields. And those four farmers, a couple of them were corporately owned, and a couple were privately owned, and the privately owned already had hunters hunting those turkeys in late fall, which I think you're seeing more of now than you used to. You didn't used to see fall turkey hunters. Now you are.
No, not at all.
And I love fall turkey hunting. But then today, I drove 120 miles. A lot of those same fields, not a bird in a field at the same time I was around yesterday. I can't put my finger on it, but it's definitely happening. When we come back, we're going to talk upland hunting a little bit, and we're going to wrap it up. You're listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel and Danielle. We'll be right back.
¿Te tiene agobiado tu trabajo? ¿Sueñas con una carrera profesional donde puedas ganar más dinero y te sientas apreciado? Si tu respuesta es afirmativa, entonces Sigma Castings, una división de Sigma Engineered Solutions en Marquesan y Jackson, es tu respuesta. Son más que una empresa, son una familia de expertos dedicados que abarcan continentes. Te harán sentir apreciado de muchas maneras. Por ejemplo, el nivel básico de pago es de $18 por hora con revisiones periódicas de rendimiento. Después de los primeros 90 días de empleo, tendrás derecho a 80 horas de vacaciones más 11 feriados pagados. Aún más, ganarías un bono de $2,000 por permanecer en tu puesto. Te ofrecen un paquete de beneficios robusto, con primas bajas y excelente cobertura, y su plan de retiro 401k te va a impresionar. Se está contratando ahora para el primer turno, lunes a viernes, de 5 de la mañana a 2 de la tarde. Empieza tu nueva carrera ya con Sigma Castings en Marquesan y Jackson. Encuéntralos en Indeed o llama a 920-260-8560 y levántate en la mañana feliz de ir al trabajo.
¿Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Here's today's STEM tip. Don't throw out that old plastic bottle. Repurpose it by turning it into an awesome terrarium. Just fill it with sand, pebbles, soil, and your favorite plant. It'll grow sealed right in its own ecosystem. Learn more at SheCanSTEM. A message from the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. A few flurries possible at times this afternoon, otherwise cloudy. Highs around 20, winds out of the west 10 to 15 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 8 above tonight, partly cloudy skies. Cloudy skies tomorrow, a few flurries possible at times, high temperatures reach up to 25. A dusting of snow tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 16 degrees.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road. When along came a semi with a...
Yeah, that's lost soul that we'd love to have back, old Johnny Cash. Johnny Cash. That's not a horrible impersonation, Johnny Cash.
Yeah, sort of.
You got kind of a... Well, you have a lower voice than me. You got a voice for radio. Or, I was going to say you got a bass for radio. Welcome back, Wisconsin. You're listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman filling in as guest host today. We've got deer expert Paul House, who's getting an education today along with me on waterfowl, game birds, great hunting birds in the state of Wisconsin by Taylor Finger, the top dog at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources when it comes to game birds. He's the game bird ecologist. And when you move from waterfowl ecologist to game bird ecologist, was that a fairly steep learning curve for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not a turkey biologist or a pheasant biologist or a ruffed grouse. You know, I spent my entire career focusing on waterfowl, so I'm rapidly learning how to become...
That beard gets any longer, you're going to start looking like a rough grouse, I can tell you that.
Learning how to be a turkey biologist and a pheasant biologist, and, you know, just recognizing that it's a completely different bird, you know, just the way harvest is, the way the populations grow, that type of thing. It's a whole new game.
Yeah, it is fascinating. Paul was bringing up some interesting things about upland hunting, which is huge in the state of Wisconsin. But
he used to be real huge down by us. And that's, you know, we grew up, it was, you know, chasing the ringneck pheasant. And that was one thing that we did when we were kids constantly. We'd go out on the weekends and there was just a ton of birds, a lot of good population around here. And now it's dwindled to, I mean, I saw one on a farm this fall, and I was just shocked because that's the first bird I've seen in the wild in 5, 6, 7 years. So that was kind of my question, is why have we lost our game birds? Is it predatory issues? I mean, I see the, you know, we got a huge population of bald eagles now around. I don't know if that has something to do with it, or grasslands or stuff like that. So if you kind of fill us in on that, that'd be appreciated.
Sure. The primary thing is habitat. That's going to be the driving factor in terms of whether or not we have a sustainable population or a population that's going to grow. And for example, if you look back in, you know, the early 2000s, we had almost 750,000 acres of CRP on the landscape. And then
explain to people what CRP is.
CRP is a cropland reserve program, which is a way that a private landowner can basically take their land out of crop and basically let it grow into grassland, and the federal government will give them a stipend per acre for an extended period of time. So again, it's just a way that, you know, if you didn't want to farm it, you didn't want to do anything, the federal government will end up giving you some money just basically not to do anything with your land. However, over the last 20 years, the way corn prices have gone up and things along those lines, those farmers are taking that acreage out of CRP and putting it back into crop, which is directly resulting in, you know, hundreds of thousands of lost acres in grassland nesting habitat for birds.
Makes sense. Plus technology with all the tractors and everybody can plant faster and it's more efficient for them. So I'm assuming that that's part of it. It'd be nice that maybe if there's a little bit higher, you know, return on doing that. I mean, I would love to put in even my farm into CRP. It would be phenomenal to be able to have that habitat because they are definitely missing around here for sure.
Yeah. And I have kind of mixed beliefs on it. I have a pheasant dog who turned out to be a lap dog. Her name's Fancy Camouflage. That's actually the dog's name. I wanted Camouflage, and of course I lost out to the three women and a female dog at home.
Always will, baby.
Now the dog's name is Fancy, but we call her Fancy Camo, and my daughter says, Dad, it's like you got Fancy Camo and you have a dog named Fancy Camo. So
perfect.
But I see pheasants from time to time. And you hear, they will alert, like if you walk past, they have a really unique sound and
I miss that sound.
You hear that sound and you know there's a pheasant around. But if we increase CRP in grasslands in southeast Wisconsin, is this a climate conducive to them actually breeding here?
I would say, yeah. I mean, again, with our winters becoming more and more mild, definitely, if we had the habitat at a large enough scale, we would definitely be having. I mean, if you look at South Dakota, you look at North Dakota, they have harsh winters. They have those types of things, but they have the habitat that's available to sustain those wild populations. And that's just right now, even before we'd have good numbers of wild pheasants, but we had a lot more smaller farmlands where you had crop rows, you had just smaller things where all of those fence rows, all those ditches, all those things have been taken out,
right,
and we're making huge fields. Sure. And you don't have a place for those birds to either get away from predators, to get away from really heavy snows, to get away from those types of things. So
parrots don't have ditches to live in anymore.
Yep.
And I got to imagine you got a rooster out there or a hen out there and they're squawking away and they don't have a mate anywhere nearby them, so it's awfully hard to sustain a breeding population when you've got some solos. Are the most of the solo pheasant we're seeing, are those birds that have flown off from a game preserve?
So
in southeast Wisconsin?
The Wisconsin DNR does stock. This year we stocked about 75,000 pheasants. So we have we have a ton of public land across basically the southern half of the state of Wisconsin that we specifically identify, and then we release birds on a weekly basis throughout the entire pheasant season. We're actually ramping up for the holiday hunt portion. We're going to be stocking pheasants throughout the next basically 2 weeks to, again, provide additional opportunity for folks that are home for Christmas, home for the holidays and things along those lines. But again, recognizing that right now it's tough to have a sustainable pheasant population, and we have, you know, pheasant stamp money that all goes into this. So right now, we do stock a lot of pheasants out there. So in most cases, if you do see a pheasant, the odds of it being one that's been here for 3 or 4 years considered a wild pheasant is likely not the case. It's probably one that was put out as a pheasant stocking operation from the department.
Yeah, and I want to remind people, if you've got your conservation patron license, that's another species that is so rarely explored. But it's really a beautiful bird that occurs naturally. And even if you're hunting the stocked pheasants, there are plenty of public land spots to run your dog, or even just walk through by yourself and your shotgun.
Right, yeah, it's a perfect time of the year to be out. If you have your dog, yep, there's nothing better than watching a dog work a bird. Whether you're talking a pheasant, retrieving a duck, where you're up north and you're with rough grouse, there's nothing that gives you a better feeling than seeing all of that hard work that you put in to do that, to see them react that way. So, no, this is an awesome opportunity, and there's tons of acres. There's thousands of acres that we do this on. So get out and explore the types of properties that we have, because they're all different.
When you're out there and you're hunting, I feel like in the state of Wisconsin, I feel like waterfowl gets special treatment or special attention. I feel like turkeys get special attention. I feel like we don't, as hunters, proliferate the image of public hunting of pheasants as much as we should. And I think the pheasant stocking program we actually have here is pretty fantastic. So
yeah, without it, we wouldn't have that opportunity. So
yeah, there's no doubt about it. Folks, agreed. That's how quick it goes, man. Taylor Finger is here. We could talk to him for hours on end. Paul House and I are never at a shortage for what to say. So,
never.
He's going to be back. And before we end this show, Taylor, I want to get you pinned down to come back because we love having you on. You're great radio. Very interesting, smart guy, and head of the Game Birds Biology section at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. You've been listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel and Danielle. We'll see you next week.
Good night, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Join Max Inc. Radio this New Year's Eve as we present live at thespaceship.tv. Max Inc. Radio will broadcast live from the spaceship.tv studios 6 p.m. to midnight, plus live performances from the civil engineers. Linda and the Zeros. Porky's Groove Machine.
Who's there, the Spice Girls? Muy caliente.
Oh, they're not kidding. Live streaming video at thespaceship.tv and live on this civic media station. Let's party New Year's Eve starting at 6 p.m. live from thespaceship.tv. Happy New Year's from Civic Media and Max Inc. Radio. We are local music.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM